I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, your host weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock, offering up a safe space to the independent thinkers out there. I want to remind everybody, starting out, and I'll mention this several times, you just heard Representative Shanks on with Clay Edwards this morning. Americans for Prosperity, while the legislature's in session, Americans for Prosperity is having their Capitol Day on this Thursday. Starts at 11:30 at the old Capitol Inn. You go in, they'll feed you a lunch, tell you a little bit about the legislative process, how to talk to your legislators, and then they will be taking people over to the Capitol just to, if you want to meet or just be seen or just be shown as some of the numbers out there, people who are actually paying attention to what the legislature does these days. And I would imagine there is more interest in what is going on when it comes to Washington, D.C., when it comes to Mississippi legislature as well, than maybe any time since I've been alive, as we have been micromanaged to death over the past couple of years, for sure. It's a great awakening of people. This is a great way to participate in that, and you can do it in a group of like-minded people. You'll meet some good people down there and make some new friendships and know who the freedom lovers are, because that's who Americans for Prosperity kind of caters to and lobbies for. So anyway, that's Capitol Day. That's this Thursday, starting at 11:30 at the old Capitol Inn downtown. We'll be talking about that more this week. Quotes of the day today, we'll get into that before we get into the meat of the show, because I believe we're seeing a turning. I've got a great quote of the day today from an unlikely modern-day pontificator. George Orwell said, "Football and beer filled up the horizon of their minds. To keep them in control was not difficult. Football and beer filled up the horizon of their minds. To keep them in control was not difficult." I got to tell you, I was not thinking about my freedom at all last night as I watched that game between Kansas City and the Buffalo Bills. Holy cow. That was quite a game. I think we're supposed to still be mad at the NFL. I'm really not, actually, a very big NFL fan at all, but it was a game on, and I was doing some work trying to get the show together and doing some notes, and found myself absolutely fascinated, particularly by the last couple of minutes of that game. I'm tempted to watch. I'm not sure if I feel, you know, I really cheer for good human beings. Really doesn't have to be sports, anything else, just good human beings out there. I'm a big fan of. And listen to Josh Allen with the Buffalo Bills. Holy cow. He took one on the chin last night after a pretty amazing performance in an away game at Kansas City, the way that turned out. But anyway, they did have my mind last night. Wasn't drinking, had no beer, but the football certainly distracted me. I was not a freedom fighter last night from 8 to 10 o'clock. Julian Assange said people should have privacy, governments should have transparency. For that thought, of course, he has been persecuted and prosecuted by the Obama administration, the Trump administration, and now the Biden administration, because that's such a radical thought that the government should be transparent. A quote by James Madison says, "It will be of little avail to the people if the laws be so voluminous that they cannot be read, or so incoherent that they cannot be understood." And this is the problem. We have too many laws. We got a Mississippi legislature down there right now adding hundreds of new lines of code and regulations and everything else to listen to the wrangling over the medical marijuana bills and make enough to make me want to throw up in my mouth a little bit. I was talking to some people about that this weekend. You know, Tate Reeves' insistence on taking this amount down, the amount that someone can get, basically just assures that those who are suffering the most will not be able to get enough medication to get them through an entire day. That's essentially what it does. Because apparently nobody's told Tate Reeves that marijuana is already here in Mississippi. He believes these will be the first marijuana leaves, marijuana flowers, to ever have existed in Mississippi, so he's going to be really careful and tight with its controls. But actually what it's going to do is it's going to limit people. It'll be one of the smallest limits in the United States, because maybe other states actually wanted to help the people that the law was intended to help. Here in Mississippi, Tate Reeves is going to assure that people suffering from some of these chronic conditions will not have enough to actually solve their problem. Nice job there, Tater Tot. And Ron Paul said, government should never be able to do anything you can't do. Yeah, I talked last week about the Overton window. Boy, this will be a big shocker to conservatives out there who believe that once a law is passed and the police start enforcing it, then you have to obey, or they will kidnap you, kill you, or put you in a cage. Government should never be able to do anything you can't do. If you can't steal from your neighbor, you can't send the government to your neighbor to steal for you. Amen. And then there's this. This is one of my favorites. This is I think we're seeing a real turning, particularly when it comes to the COVID stuff. And we have to welcome the people who may have been on other sides that are coming our way now. People have finally seen the vaccines don't work. The lockdowns didn't work. The CDC itself is now saying those cloth masks we tricked you into wearing for the last 22 months. Turns out they were worthless. So as people continually wake up, we need to make a safe space for them to come back to sanity. We don't need to do a whole lot of, I told you so's, boy, were you stupid, I can't believe you fell for it. We can think that. I think that. But when people change their minds and start speaking up and realizing the con job that the last 22 months has been, we need to make a safe space for them. So even Bill Maher on his Real Time show, here's what Bill Maher said on it. I'm over COVID. I was never scared of it. I was always scared of the reaction to it. And as this has played out, that only proved to be more true for me. I'm sure many people feel different, but that's me. It was never that virulent a threat, I thought, to people who were in good health. So the fact that America, the medical establishment, never even attempted to get people to live a healthier lifestyle as a response to this pandemic is a giant scandal to me. The people who didn't do that have blood on their hands. There's no other way to put it. Amen, Bill Maher. There's plenty of things I'll disagree with Bill Maher on. He certainly has been a platform, endless platform, for some of the most mentally challenged Democrats on his shows, and his audiences for the past few years have just been a bunch of robotic sheep applauding every single time some leftist said something anti-Trump or whatever ridiculousness they did. But anyway, Bill Maher waking up, and he had on his show Barry Weiss. I'm not sure if she is still, I believe she was New York Times, and believe again, I disagree greatly with Barry Weiss on several things, and particularly foreign policy stuff. She can be pretty, 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 pretty bad on. But Barry Weiss was on the Bill Maher show, and she said this.
I'm done.
With this question?
No, I'm done with COVID. I'm done. It's yeah. I went so hard on COVID.
I remember.
Sprayed the Pringles cans that I bought at the grocery store, stripped my clothes off because I thought COVID would be on my clothes. Like, I did it all. I watched Tiger King. I got to the end of Spotify. Like, we all did it, right?
Well, here's the thing. A lot of us did do it.
And then we were told, you get the vaccine. You get the vaccine and you get back to normal. And we haven't gotten back to normal. And it's ridiculous at this point. I know that so many of my liberal and progressive friends are with me on this, and they do not want to say it out loud because they are scared to be called anti-vax or to be called science denial or to be, you know, smeared as a Trumper. I'm sorry. If you believe the science, you will look at the data that we did not have 2 years ago, and you will find out that Cloth masks do not do anything. You will realize that you can show your vaccine passport at a restaurant and still be asymptomatic and carrying Omicron. And you will realize, most importantly, that this is going to be remembered by the younger generation as a catastrophic moral crime. The city of Flint, Michigan, which is 80%, I think, minority students, has just announced indefinite virtual schooling. In the past 2 years, we've seen among young girls a 51% increase in self-harm. People are killing themselves. They are anxious. They are depressed. They are lonely. That is why we need to end it more than any inconvenience that it's been to the rest of us. I think it's a pandemic of bureaucracy. It's not real anymore.
Let's not forget.
Wow. Yeah. And that's presumably this left-wing audience of Bill Maher's cheering for Barry Weiss saying, let's end this, that this is a vast moral crime. And I hope that younger generations, should they break free of the propaganda of the school system, and they don't watch the media. I can guarantee you, my children have probably not seen a mainstream network news program in ever. I used to, as they were growing up, you know, I would kind of, they knew I paid attention to the news. They knew that I was disgusted by politics and politicians. So they knew current events was kind of on my radar. But the younger generation is certainly not watching mainstream news, save some maybe social justice warriors that flock to the Rachel Maddow show. But I do hope that a younger generation's realized this has been, as she calls it, a moral crime. And hopefully it'll be remembered that way. The history will be written by the victors, and it has yet to be seen who the victors will be. Apparently there were about 35,000 people up in Washington, D.C. this weekend at the End the Mandates rally with Robert Malone and McCullough and Del Bigtree and a whole group of doctors up there. A new document has been signed by 17,000 doctors, apparently calling what's going on absolutely absurd. I don't have time today, or probably really even the interest, to continue to play more and more doctors calling out this, but we're finding that there are actually people in the medical field, doctors, willing to speak up and speak out against what we've seen. So it feels to me, feels a tiny bit like the narrative and everything is turning, and maybe even some of the people on the left. Again, I say, anybody who comes back from the hysterical COVID cult, we need to make a safe space for them and welcome them, allow them the room to change their mind. No, I told you so's. None of that stuff. Just tell them that you're glad that they are back, because we certainly need the numbers to shift in a more sane direction. Even the British Medical Journal. Check this out. We're going to juxtapose the British Medical Journal with the FDA. The BMJ, a widely peer-reviewed medical trade journal published by the trade union, the British Medical Association, called for the release of the data, talking about the vaccine data, in an editorial published on Wednesday. Quote, today, despite the global rollout of COVID-19 vaccine and treatments, the anonymized participant-level data underlying the trials for these new products remain inaccessible to doctors, researchers, and the public, and are likely to remain that way for years to come. This is morally indefensible for all trials, but especially for those involving major public health interventions. British Medical Journal also accused pharmaceutical companies of, quote, reaping vast profits without adequate independent scrutiny of their scientific claims, pointing to Pfizer, whose COVID-19 vaccine trial was, quote, funded by the company and designed, run, analyzed, and authored by Pfizer employees. So even the British Medical Journal right now is accusing pharmaceutical companies, in particular Pfizer, of reaping vast profits without adequate independent scrutiny of their scientific claims. Now, juxtapose that with your own AMA here, your American Medical Association here, who says that they're in favor of the mandates. They actually wrote a friend of the court brief in support of the Biden forced vaccinations for employers. or employees of companies with more than 100 people. The AMA, the American Medical Association, that came out and told companies to continue to force their employees to be part of the grand experiment. This is the American Medical Association. And then, meanwhile, the Food and Drug Administration had asked a judge to give it 75 years to produce all the data concerning the Pfizer and BioNTech vaccine. So while the British Medical Journal is waking up and saying, hey, signaling here is showing us that this vaccine isn't working and it's hurting a lot of people, it's time that you came out and told us exactly what's in this thing. Give us all of your trial data. Here in the United States, we've got the AMA backing absolute force coercion of taking a shot, and our FDA saying, you should give Pfizer 75 years to release that data. We have in this country, we have in the United States of America, the most corrupt medical system in the Western world. I've got to say, I'm going to assume maybe in some third world countries that maybe you have to pay bribes directly to some hospital administrator to say, get checked into a hospital. I don't know. I would imagine there's some crazy corruption maybe in some countries that we're not aware of. But as far as one that holds itself out as some kind of a professional, polished, you know, you hear a lot of people say, we have the best medical system in the world. It's patently untrue. We do have the most corrupt medical establishment in the Western world. The people are waking up to that as well. I'll be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
Clay Edwards just popped his head in here. We were talking a little something about medical marijuana, unrelated topic, but I triggered myself because I'm on a hair trigger about this limit that Tate Reeves and now our legislature is set to impose on the amount of medicine that a patient can get. And it just hit me. Do drug dealers have lobbyists? So what I was thinking is maybe what's happened, you know, it's pretty hard to explain how Mississippi could take one of the best laws in the country, which is Ballot Initiative 65, and then turn it into something that has this limit on it that puts us right back in, I guess, the bottom 25% of states who do this stuff. And again, this 3-ounce limit that they're going to put on Mississippi patients will assure that some people can't get enough medication to get them through the day if they need more. And there's many conditions that will probably need more. And so I was just thinking, well, maybe drug dealers, because that's what's going to happen. See, people will just, law-abiding, good Christian law-abiding citizens who are trying to treat chronic pain will run short every month of product. And so I guess they'll just go back to their local drug dealer. Or, you know, they may just go ahead and stick with their drug dealer anyway. Because Mississippi is also going to tax this stuff, which is going to make it much more expensive. And the drug dealers probably just run some sales. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe our state government has been captured by the drug dealer lobby. Because this is one of the only ways that they're going to stay in business. Anyway, there is some fighting back on the COVID stuff. Man, there's a beautiful, beautiful sight. I talked about a bunch of truckers last week went up to, I think it was on the eve maybe of when they were going to do vaccine requirements for truckers entering Canada, and they went to some border checkpoints and just flooded it with trucks. They had flags. They were honking. They were going to slow and clog up the system. Then a couple of days ago, thousands of Canadian heavy trucks headed to Ottawa to shut the city down until the Liberal government lifts unlawful and immoral vaccine mandates. And there is video of this as well. I'd play it for you, but the guy speaks French, so the narration isn't great, but it's fantastic. It is miles and miles and miles. You cannot see the end of this convoy of truckers headed to Ottawa to shut the place down. And if you don't think, number one, not delivering goods, and number two, putting those monstrous vehicles in the way of traffic, will shut things down. As I said, the truckers, the nurses, and the lawyers should have shut this down, should have nipped it in the bud. But like anything else, everybody thinks that if they just obey for a little while, it'll be fine. It's only 2 weeks. It's only 100 days of masking, right? We're always thrown off by these things. We never learn the lesson that once you give these charlatans power over you, you almost never get it back. But anyway, the truckers are trying. Go with God to the truckers that are trying to shut down Ottawa. This was on British TV. This is a GBN. I guess that's Great Britain Network or Great Britain News, something. They seem to have a little bastion of free speech there. It's a very polished thing. It's a nice-looking studio. It's a Fox, CNN, MSNBC quality studio and lighting, so I assume it's a fairly large thing in Great Britain. You know, we're so used to just seeing things from the BBC over there, but this organization has had quite a few people on there. I've played clips from them before, but they had a teacher on. And this is a couple of minutes, and again, there's a visual component to this as this teacher just breaks down, but it's still, you know, Great Britain has overtaken the United States. They just did a whiplash over there where Boris Johnson, because he's in political trouble, now, don't think he did this out of the goodness of his heart. He's in some political trouble, so he's basically just said, we're lifting all restrictions, no more vaccine passports, no mandates, no masking. He just ended it all last week, and I think on the 26th is when a lot of these restrictions roll off, and he said they will not take them up again. So they have just leapfrogged right past the U.S., having been a totalitarian government for so long. And I was watching another beautiful sight today of some protesters facing off with the police, you know, dressed in the black motorcycle helmets all the way down to the black gloves, black clothes, black boots, black shields, and this crowd is just going after them. I did wonder, though, I keep wondering this when I see these things. You'll see the police use their pepper spray or whatever they're using. I'm always wondering, why don't protesters use it back on the police? Now, I know to a law and order crowd that might seem a bit much, but we're talking about places where these people have been stripped of all of their freedoms, and the police have, in many of these countries, westernized countries, have seemed rather enthusiastic about going out and cracking heads of even 88-year-old women, pushing them to the ground because they're not wearing a mask properly. That calls for rebellion from the people. And you see this this line of police with their shields and everything's in black. They always remind me of the guerrilla authorities in Planet of the Apes. Yeah, the very ominous stuff with the knee pads and the elbow pads and the armor on. That's what it always reminds me of, the oppressive monkeys in Planet of the Apes. But they're constantly in this little circle. The crowd has them surrounded, has them backing up. It's just beautiful to see people rise up against this stuff. But every time anyone advances on them, the police shoot them with this pepper spray. And you can get bear spray. Why don't the crowds ever actually then try to spray back? I'm not encouraging this in any way. It's just an observation. Anyway, this is the teacher that went on Great Britain N. Now, News, Network, whatever the N stands for.
Obviously, this comes as a brilliant bit of happiness for me. I don't actually think I can stop smiling when I'm talking. It's about time. Obviously, you just said earlier the one.
And she's talking about the removal of all of these mandates.
What makes me the happiest is the face masks in schools. There was zero evidence for those face masks to be in schools. There have been studies that show that because of the types of face masks that because I was in schools when all of these policies were enacted, the face masks that we would have are not medical grade face masks, therefore they would make no difference to transmission. But what I found out when I was in the classroom, and most commentators have never been able to speak on this because they quite frankly didn't experience it, so you can hear it from me the first. There were teachers that were sitting there that would, you know, be yelling at the poor year sevens about their face masks more than they would be teaching them. Those shy kids that would sit at the back of the class that would never speak, it was a massive barrier to them to impact their learning. They were already terrified, didn't want to speak out, and now they've got another barrier to engaging their learning. Communication problems were impossible. I'm going to be honest with you, most of the time when we were in school, we took them off because we couldn't hear each other. They couldn't hear us, we couldn't hear them. You're in schools to learn, and the damage that they have done to my generation has been unbelievable. Like, I sat there in August.
The damage what's done?
That they've done to the rest of our lives, to our education. I sat there in August and literally watched my future crumble in front of my eyes.
Tell me why.
Well, they cancelled my exams. So I got my exams cancelled once, went back and thought, no, you know what, this is not on. I'm not getting screwed over by the algorithm. I'm better than this. Got there, they cancelled them again, and I thought, nothing I can do anymore. So this makes me so angry. It literally ruined our lives. And nobody spoke about it at all. And the commentators, they had union reps come on and say, this is what the school should have put in place. And they didn't care about what this did to us. And this is the first time I've ever spoken about it on TV because I knew that I'd cry about it. But I literally watched and felt like my entire life was falling apart because of what this government did to young people. And nobody cares. Not one person has cared about children in this pandemic. They think, oh, let's throw... Why are we putting masks on them when people can go to football stadiums and they can go to theatres and play Nadeem Zahawi sitting there at the teaching awards with no mask, and yet we're disrespecting kids? This pandemic will finish. The damage this has done for us is forever, and we'll never get it back.
I mean, it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible. A moral crime. I think that's what Barry Weiss called it. This has been an absolute moral crime. And I'm not sure where we are right now in Jackson Public Schools. Are they still forcing masking in Jackson Public Schools? Because from my understanding, I mean, certainly on this station, maybe I don't reach parents of kids in Jackson Public Schools, but I've never heard a peep out of anybody saying they were going to go to the Jackson Public Schools school board meetings to demand the masks off their face. But I'll tell you, it just seems like the black community and vast portions of it, from judging just from being out in public, has really embraced this masking. It's very strange for a group of people that fought for rights and freedoms, has been so easy to put right back into some level of compliance. And let me say this too as a personal observation. If you're a young person and you were going to interview for a job, and you walk into said interview, and the interviewers read the room, I guess is my point. If you walk into a place where your interviewer is not masked, the staff that is working for that employer is not masked, it might be beneficial to you to remove your mask and have a proper interview where the interviewer can actually see your face and understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. Just a little helpful tip for anybody out there looking for work. I have experienced this now many, many times. People that are unintelligible with this mask on, and an employer has no idea what you even look like. Now, there may be places, there are hystericals out there running businesses that may hire somebody and really admire your compliance. For some places, maybe that's a good thing. Hey, this is somebody I can convince to do anything. They'll comply with anything. Of course, it's not usually the case with an employer and employee, but you're going to walk out of there with no job the vast majority of times because an employer who is interviewing you without a mask on has obviously made a statement that this is not a masked situation right here. It is unbelievable to me that even the most basic navigation of a job interview, particularly at the entry level, it doesn't matter. I'm sure it does not matter. If you were going to interview for a white-collar executive position and you walk into a place and see that everybody else is not being hysterical, and yet you appear to be hysterical, first words out of your mouth in that situation better be, I'm sorry, I just wear a mask because I have X, Y, and Z. Of course, if you tell them you've got any kind of medical condition, they may not want you on their group plan. But for the love of God, tell your children if they go to an interview, even if they have embraced the face binky and wear their mask religiously in the car and elsewhere, if they want a job and they go into a place that is not mask, wearing a mask, and try to mumble their way through an interview through that thing, it ain't going to happen.
Arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, phone number 601-879-0002. You want to weigh in? The mandates rally up in Washington, D.C. Again, about 35,000 people showed up. It was freezing cold up there. The Washington, D.C. mayor had said something along the lines of they're only going to allow them two porta potties and two food trucks for 35,000 people. So they probably quashed some of the numbers going up there. But still a good rally. And strangely, no violence, no nothing. Just an end the mandates rally. And one of the big messages of it was, you know, I don't know, adults. For adults, you should seek to open debates and wake people up. But adults are adults. It was a lot of trying to protect the children from what's coming down on them right now. You just heard that one girl talking about how the British government essentially destroyed their lives. I heard Barry Weiss talking about girls and their self-harm up 50%. There's been psychological problems put onto our children because of masking and isolation and all the rest of these nut job reactions to a virus that 99.999% of children survived, but we still took out our hysteria on them. Our paranoia became their paranoia. Our hypochondria became their fear. It's what we've done to the kids is, I think, leaps and bounds worse than what we've even done to ourselves. And that's bad enough. But they are really coming after the kids. I want you to hear this little piece of propaganda. Holy cow. And this is from NPR, National Public Radio. I don't know if this is going to be something rolled out in Mississippi or just be on guard for something along these lines.
Just 28% of children ages 5 to 11 years old have gotten the first dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. NPR's Anya Kamenetz reports a new free online course is trying to change that.
The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health is offering a 2-hour course on the platform Coursera to prepare educators and community members to talk to parents who have doubts about the vaccines. The course creators say, start by listening with empathy. Then tailor your responses to address the specific concerns that people express. Try to debunk misinformation and offer fact-checking from trusted sources without putting people down or mocking them. And if someone states a false belief, validate their feelings by acknowledging that it's hard to make our way through the disinformation landscape, then pivot to the truth.
So basically this is, don't say anything harsh to them because you'll turn them off, but just nod your head and look like you're actually listening to them. But be prepared to say the following things as soon as they shut their stupid pie holes and tell them that everything they just said is wrong, but do it in a nice way. This is how you convince people. Give them the Bloomberg and Johns Hopkins sheet of facts. This is after, of course, these groups were wrong on masks, wrong on lockdowns, wrong on vaccines, but we're going to still use those people's information. And that's how you do it. So they're rolling out this program. Again, it's a 2-hour tutorial about how to get parents to get their kids involved in the experiment. How to debunk the parents' misinformation. It is just absolutely disgusting stuff. I would not be surprised at all if there are teachers, educators, and bureaucrats watching that 2-hour module on how to twist people, how to bring people into the COVID cult as WYAB tries to lead everybody out. Got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am.
Hey, what's going on?
I was wondering, you know, I went to the FDA site and read the emergency use authorizations.
Yeah.
The ones I read, the youngest age, I think, was for Pfizer, and it was 16 years of age. Have they gotten a new authorization to put this stuff in children?
Yeah, I believe. I mean, yeah, the last we got down to 5 to 11. Originally, it was I think it was 16.
Two of them were 18. One of them was 16.
Yeah, they've got it down to 5 years old now, and they're going for the toddlers.
I know they're saying that, but I didn't find that information at the FDA site.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been so many of these things, I don't know that I could actually recall that. But, you know, you say that, it's almost like, well, of course they must have, because they're giving the shots to five-year-olds, but there are no rules anymore. I mean, so, you know.
Well, I suspect that it's not authorized for use on children.
Well, there are certainly doctors out there convincing parents to roll up their children's sleeves to bring them into the grand experiment as we speak.
I suspect they'll all pay the price for that.
Let's hope so. I hope there are some attorneys right out there right now just sharpening their pencils and getting ready.
All righty. That's all I had. That's the question I had. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, man. I'll take a look and see if I can find it. Yeah. You know, these things, I talk about the Johns Hopkins and the Bloomberg School of Health that are putting out this little propaganda piece for teaching educators how to convince them to get parents to get their shots done. There was a tweet out, says Israel first to vaccinate, first to panic and turn to boosters. When that didn't work, first to panic again and try fourth doses. Now, once again, Israel has the highest rate of infection in the entire world. And you should see this chart. Holy cow. You should see this chart. It is absolutely amazing to me. Of course, you still have and the thing that I've got to say this around every time, because we see so many people. Last week it was Stephen A. Smith, one of the sports ball guys on one of them. What is he on, ESPN or something? I don't know. I don't pay attention to these guys. There's nothing more boring than listening to 5 hours of, you know, what some athlete said or did or injury or whatever. I mean, I was as entertained by those football games this weekend as anybody else. That's great, but good Lord, to sit there and listen to that stuff for hours and hours, and that's what Stephen A. Smith does, feels weird and immature to me. But anyway, he got COVID. He's, I think, triple jabbed. He got COVID, got hospitalized, and said he almost died, and he thanked Pfizer. He thanked Pfizer, essentially. Thank goodness he had the vaccine, because it could have really turned out bad for him had he not had the shot. So we still have those, but we always need to remember when these public figures, anybody in a position, you know, the Jimmy Kimmels, the what's that nut job on CBS? I'm not Corbett. Whatever his name is. I can't believe I'm spacing on that. But these ridiculous late night hosts that are always pushing these shots. Understand there was $3 billion put out by the Biden White House. That's with a B, billion dollars that was put out to influencers. This included clergy, Instagram models, athletes, probably talking heads on sports networks. $3 billion was sent out to influence people towards getting the shots. So always remember that when you hear statements from these people. That may be the biggest thing at play, is whatever their portion. You can buy a lot of influencers with $3 billion. I know that doesn't sound like a lot of money now, because the U.S. is steadily bleeding out trillions every year, but $3 billion, still a big number. And they have bought a lot of these people, and shame on them. There is a special place in hell for anybody who is out there hawking these shots, particularly to our children, for some kind of a $35,000, $100,000 check from the government. Or, I mean, this puts marketing, I mean, again, all credit to the Pfizer lobbyist who got the government to not only do the advertising for them, not only do the distribution, not only pay for the shots and the research, but to also pay off influencers to convince people to take this private company's product. Kudos to the lobbyists or the Pfizer marketing people that made that happen. But just remember, that's where their bread is buttered. Jimmy Kimmel doesn't know anything about this shot. He just knows he's going to cash the check. Or I guess he's on ABC, Disney. Maybe there's some connection there as well. But trust me, there is money behind this. None of these late night hosts, Stephen Colbert on CBS, none of these late night hosts are somehow really just think that this thing is great. They've studied the science and they think it's just a shining success. Every one of them cashing checks. I guarantee you, again, $3 billion, you can buy off a lot of personalities, a lot of, air quotes here in the studio, influencers. So if any of you out there right now are listening to these influencers on Twitter and Instagram or TikTok or late night comedy shows, they've been bought and paid for. You're the dupe. All right, went way long so far this hour, so only got a few seconds to end this. When we come back, excuse me, we're going to talk a little bit about some economic stuff. And Biden said, what are Republicans for? And I found a cartoon that said what Republicans are for, and I found both things to be kind of interesting. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and also some of the dust-up stuff with Russia. Part of the drinking game. Some of our foreign policy establishment did a huge, huge hypocrisy. It's a three drinker. I told you every time our foreign policy people say something, accuse Russia of doing something that we do almost on a daily basis, it's time to drink. Well, get your bottle ready.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. You got to love this country. I do love this country. I hate our government. I mean, just the red-hot passion of a thousand suns. That's so, I mean, but it is almost comical to watch them flail away. There was a tweet put out this weekend by the Washington, D.C. Homeland Security and Emergency Management. They said, if you're hitting the grocery store to prepare for winter weather, please just buy what you need and leave some for others! Exclamation point. You may have noticed empty shelves in some stores due to national supply chain issues, but there is no need to buy more than you normally would. Only take what you need. So there. They're sending out a tweet. They've broken the entire country, broken our economy, broken everything, and now they want you to do with a little bit less. I'm just happy it's happening in Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is falling apart. It's turning into its own little violent third world country. It couldn't happen to a nicer town. I'm sure there's some wonderful people who have to live in Washington, D.C. It's probably some great business owners. But look, what do they say? You lie with snakes. Well, that's what happens. I wanted to finish one thing real quick. Oh, did I get off that story? I think I did. There was some stuff coming out of Denmark. I'm actually going to find it again because it's pretty fascinating. So check this out. Denmark. I'm going to finish up something on the shots real quick, and then we're going to move on to some other things. Denmark has really been big in taking their shots. Very big. A lot of restrictions in Denmark around vaccine passports and those kinds of things. So the citizens lined up, and they are 95% adult vaccinated, 65% boosted in Denmark. And people have pointed out, they said, well, it's that radical 5% of the unvaccinated, they're causing all the problems. Well, no. Most of the unvaccinated, and keep this in mind when you hear the statistic, most of the unvaccinated in Denmark, because there is no real resistance, as you can tell by their 95% number, most of the people who are unvaccinated in Denmark are so because their health is so frail that they can't risk the shot. Probably some elderly people with some conditions where it is actually not advisable to become part of the experiment. And so for all intents and purposes, the vast majority of Denmark is either taking the shot or is just unable to do it. And so the people who are unable to do it, the people in the unvaccinated camp, are probably somewhat compromised health-wise already. Now Denmark, 95% adult vaccinated, 65% boosted, has more COVID hospitalizations now than it did before a single Dane received a single mRNA vaccine. And the vast majority of these people are, anyone, vaccinated. Even boosters have done nothing to reverse this trend. and it shows a chart of the hospitalizations in Denmark, more than they had before anyone ever got a single shot. Again, they're 95% vaccinated, and the majority of the hospitalizations are in the vaccinated crowd. Are they ever going to stop and leave our children alone with this thing? I mean, are these kinds of headlines not enough? Are these stories, are these stats? And again, these countries provide accurate numbers. Now, Thomas Dobbs here in Mississippi, Anthony Fauci here will tell you it is only the unvaccinated being hospitalized. But boy, I wonder what that genetic mutation of those Danes is. Well, it's a genetic mutation in the Danes, the English, the Swedish, the Israelis, the Australians, where this happens over and over and over again. But we're told here in the United States it's only the unvaxxed that are in the hospital. But again, 95% vaccinated. So even if they were able to jab all of our kids and jab all of our adults who are capable of taking a shot, there is no scenario where any world experience has shown that that would be effective in fighting this disease. Denmark has 95% of their people vaccinated, and they have record hospitalizations in that country. Holy cow. The markets, stock markets are continuing their slide. It's getting a little concerning to some people, but, you know, this is a lot of time where those stock pumpers will come out and tell you it's time to buy the dip. And they may be right. If the Fed does not have another trick up its sleeve, this could be a pretty bumpy ride. People in the United States think that if you hold on to all of your investment, it always comes back. This is the Dave Ramsey approach. And so far, it has been correct. You know, if you have held, if you're a senior citizen now, and you started investing when you were young, and you just didn't touch anything through the ups and the downs and the crashes and the recessions and everything, you still made a decent return. I'm not sure what that net number is now, probably in the 6%, 7%. Maybe it's higher now after the Fed-induced bull market run we've had. But there will be a time where the stock market does not come back. Now, I don't know if this is it. Trust me. There's a possibility that the stock market can shoot to the moon from here because the Fed starts pumping trillions more into the economy. The problem is that the increase even in the stock market will not keep up with the hyperinflation that we experience from them doing that. So I'm not sure if we have a market crash or if the market goes up, but it just doesn't mean anything because the wealth you have in the market doesn't buy you anything anymore. But Japan, if anybody knows any world economics and recent history in Japan since 1990, they essentially have had no returns in their stock market. 1990, I believe, was the peak of the Japanese stock market. And the only way they've really even weathered that storm is that Japan, at least, is a net exporter. They actually produce things in Japan and send them out to the rest of the world. In the United States, we are a consumer. And so our chances of faring as well as Japan are not even that good. But anyway, Joe Biden came out, and I guess he's trying to, you know, he's trying to place blame where it kind of rightfully belongs. But I don't know. Let me read some of his comments here. Biden did a press conference. He said COVID-19 has created a lot of economic complications. No. It has not. The reaction, the hyperreaction, the hyperventilating over COVID-19 has created a lot of economic complications, including rapid price increases across the world economy. Again, no, that's not right. People see it at the gas pump and grocery stores elsewhere. And then he goes on to say this, the Federal Reserve provided extraordinary support during the crisis for the previous year and a half. This is Joe Biden talking about this. Now, I didn't get a clip of this, and I probably should have done it because some of the language in here, I guess if it's written, Joe Biden's probably better in print because then you don't have to print the long spaces where he kind of looks up into space or looks with the faraway eyes when he gets lost for 20 or 30 seconds. But he goes on to say, given the strength of our economy and pace of recent price increases, it's appropriate, as Federal Reserve Powell has indicated, to recalibrate the support that is now necessary. Now, remember, this is the same support they've been putting into the economy for 13 years. They just did it at an ever-accelerating pace the last 2 years. 13 years they have been supporting the U.S. economy. This includes during the Trump years, where Trump convinced all of his supporters that it was the greatest economy that the world had ever seen. He just failed to explain to you that the Federal Reserve was pumping trillions of dollars into that economy, trillions of dollars of funny money into that economy. They didn't do that in the 1960s. They didn't do that in the 70s. In the 50s and 60s, when we had true economic growth and the Fed wasn't endlessly printing money, I would say that might have been a better economy. Anyway, this is one of the things that Biden said. The critical job of making sure elevated prices don't become entrenched rests with the Federal Reserve, which has a dual mandate, full employment, and, get this one, stable prices. That's what your Federal Reserve. Haven't they done just a great job at that? So Joe Biden, probably, this might be interesting, heading into the midterm elections, where I still see a lot of people. I saw a cartoon of, you know, it's four pane cartoon of Joe Biden, and his hair was slightly changed in each one, and his smile was slightly changed, so it was actually Joe Biden morphing into Jimmy Carter. Because the people who believe that Carter was responsible for the inflation. Now, Carter also did stupid things like price controls and things like that that made the situation worse, no doubt. But it was actually Nixon taking us off the gold standard and Johnson before him putting us into massive amounts of debt for the Vietnam War and his great society that actually caused the run on gold, which caused the removal. You know what I mean? Every one of these characters is responsible for this mess. But I heard up to and including this morning a prominent national conservative talk show host refer to the Bidenflation. And he, I believe the comment was, this inflation is entirely Joe Biden's fault. Now, I don't know if he is paid to say those things or if he is so economically illiterate that he actually believes that this one brain-addled occupant of the White House right now somehow came on the scene and within about 6 months created inflation where there was none before. As I told you last week, anybody who tells you Biden is responsible for the inflation, anybody who uses the term Bidenflation, God love them, I know it's fun, but they either have no economic understanding whatsoever or they're just speaking to the tribe and trying to become popular. But Joe Biden may actually have to, before the 2022 midterms, certainly before 2024, because this inflation's not going anywhere. I don't believe the Fed is going to be able to raise rates a bunch because the economy is so fragile. It's just like a heroin addict trying to come down off of heroin. We just can't do it because we can't accept the pain. The first time we get a sniffle, as we start to detox and start to get the DTs, we're going to jump right back into mainlining Federal Reserve dollars. They're going to get right back into printing. That's at least my prediction. I don't believe there's any way in the world they're going to do what Paul Volcker did as a Fed head back in the early 80s and take interest rates up to where they need to be to quash inflation. They're going to freak out. They probably are. And think about this, too. The Federal Reserve is talking about inflation now. They're trying to raise rates. They didn't do it last year when the market was going up. They didn't do it the year before. Now, the year before was 2020, and we did have our little mini crash before they started really turning on the printers in April of 2020. But from April 2020 through the rest of the year, the market was just on fire. They didn't raise rates then. Stock market did well in 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, 2015, 2014, 2013, 2012. They didn't raise rates at any time during those times. Well, they did a little bit in 2018 and then reversed course because Trump freaked out because the stock market started going down a little bit. But they didn't raise rates in all of those years where supposedly GDP growth was decent and the stock market was doing great. Now they're telling you they're going to raise rates when the market has had, I think, its worst start of the year for the past 30 years, something like that. But sure, with stock market already in correction territory, sure they're going to raise rates. It's absolutely just not going to happen. They may raise. They're going to have to raise to pretend they're doing something, but they're going to retreat on it as soon as some supposed, air quotes here in the studio, crisis emerges and they say, oh, we need emergency measures for this. And then we pinky swear we're going to start raising rates to tackle inflation at X, Y, and Z time. This is just the it's an economic crime against the people of the United States, and the people of the United States have no earthly idea what's going on. They still believe you can vote your way out of inflation. It's really a sad thing to see, and it wouldn't bother me so much if people were so willfully ignorant of this stuff, choosing, instead of understanding economics, to play on the team of politician A or politician B or party A or party B. And so they just decide, because what I'm telling you is not fun for the tribe. It doesn't make for good coffee conversation amongst all of your Republican friends. What are you taking up for Joe Biden? No, I'm telling you, Joe Biden is a colossal train wreck and probably the worst president the United States has ever had. But inflation has been building and building and building for years. It's been here longer than they even are willing to admit. And so I go with facts here and reality and actual economics. I do not play partisan politics. Joe Biden, there's a million things to bash him directly on, so I don't need to lay other things at his feet that he is not the sole cause of. And it is so hard to get that through people's brains because they don't want it. They don't want that information. It just doesn't compute for them. I want to be able to blame him for everything, because then it means when I vote really hard in 2024 and elect a Trump or a DeSantis, then I believe it's all going to go away. And you're absolutely wrong. It's not going to be the case whatsoever. Joe Biden, I'll play a clip when we come back. He made a big deal about what are Republicans for, and then I ran across a cartoon by one of the conservative commentators who put out a laundry list of what Republicans are for. I mean, what Joe Biden says is ridiculous. There's obviously things that Republicans are for, but I was a little concerned about the list that was in this cartoon. We'll talk about that when we come back.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
It always takes me several days to get all the clips from any kind of an address from some politician or something, because I'm just not going to sit through them. I don't have the patience for it. I don't have the tolerance for it. And I can't afford to continue to shoot my televisions and have to buy a new one. So I just wait for people to put out clips, and I run across stuff. So apologies to be late to the game sometimes on clips of these people, Republican or Democrat. Most addressed to the nation by anybody who has risen to the major leagues of corruption, just as boring to me and aggravating. But Joe Biden said this the other day in his failing presidency as he flails around trying to find something to grab onto. He said this about the Republican Party.
I did not anticipate that there'd be such a stalwart effort to make sure that the most important thing was that President Biden didn't get anything done. Think about this. What are Republicans for? What are they for? Name me one thing they're for. And so the problem here is that I think what's happens, what I have to do, and the change in tactic, if you will, I have to make clear to the American people what we are for. We've passed a lot. We passed a lot of things that people don't even understand what's all that's in it.
Oh, believe me, we understand what Democrats are for. You never shut up about it. And the vast majority of Americans hate most of the things you're supposedly for. But apparently what Joe Biden's trying to say is that all the Republican Party are a bunch of obstructionists to what he wants to get done for the good of all humanity, right? It's obviously ridiculous. The Republicans have a platform as well. But I ran across this clip cartoon by Branco, B-R-A-N-C-O. He's got Americans for Limited Government on his thing, and he does some great cartoons. But he's got a response to this. He's got an arrow going down with Joe Biden writing it down, saying, name one thing the Republicans are for. And on the other side of this frame, it says, how about everything you're not for? And it's got an arm, a nice suit with GOP written on the sleeve, and it's got a laundry list, a long, long list of things Republicans are for. And I thought it was a little interesting. Some of them are right on. It starts with follow the Constitution. That one gave me a tiny bit of a chuckle. It was about 95% of all that Congress does, regardless of what party is in charge, is unconstitutional. Voter integrity, that is something that Republicans are tackling. However, do you believe we ever would have gotten into this mess if Republicans weren't doing things to noodle around in elections as well? Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it? Why they've allowed so many things to happen over the years. Just a suspicion on my part, but who knows? The idea that only Democrats cheated elections is a little far-fetched for me. I mean, Republicans will commit all kinds of other crimes and all kinds of other corruption. They will sell you out to the big pharmaceutical companies with things like Medicare Part D and this ridiculous Operation Warp Speed mass human experimentation. But they'd never cheated on an election. I mean, that just seems a little odd to me. But anyway, the list goes on. Law and order, secure borders, energy independence. And it says fair trade. I thought that was interesting. Instead of free trade, they want fair trade. This is a lot of times in Republican-led governments, they try to micromanage entire world trade. They're really happy about putting sanctions on Russia and Iran and Venezuela, not allowing them to trade their energy. You do know that part of that price that you're paying at the pump is because the United States foreign policy psychopath establishment has cut off tons of energy products from countries all over the world. Iran, Russia, Venezuela's got a ton of dirty crude that we're able to hit the market and get to places where it could properly be processed. Your gas prices would actually be a little bit lower. That's a Republicans have got a nice little chunk of your gas bill as well. I know that's not popular, but it's true. But they say fair trade, which means fair to the U.S. as long as we sanction everybody else. Now, there's, you know, we know we have our issues with China. None of it was addressed during the Trump administration. But it goes on to say no vax mandates. And then the next one is no Iran nukes. This is one of the GOP platform things. This is what the Republicans are for. No Iran nukes. A lot of you out there probably say, hell yeah, I want them mullahs getting them nukes. Well, I don't know if you've noticed, but countries that do not have nuclear weapons get invaded by the United States. So Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapon. But if I were them, I would sure as hell be pursuing one, as much saber rattling as we do. You know, Iranians want to protect their country just like the United States wants to protect theirs. I'm no fan of the mullahs, but boy, I sure understand it. For a lot of people who understand the Second Amendment and knowing that having a gun on your person or your property is just a great deterrent for anybody messing with you, it's hard to understand why you don't understand that a nuclear weapon in today's world is just like the Second Amendment to these countries. It's why Kim Jong-un in North Korea, that insane little tyrant, has got nuclear weapons because he understands that's probably what keeps the 38,000 U.S. troops on his southern border out of his country. Anyway, this apparently is one of the Republican things what they're for, is no Iran nukes. Very specific there. Parents' rights. I would like to believe that, but we've got a supermajority red state here where our local politicians did nothing about mask mandates. It took the parents of all political persuasions, primarily conservatives, but it took parents to actually fight to try to take masks off their children. Here in the state of Mississippi, you cannot, as a parent, just say, I don't want 72 shots for my kid before they attend school. The super red Republican majority in the House and the Senate here in Mississippi say, no, then your child has no access to the public schools. We demand, against your wishes, that you get your child immunized. So parent rights, it's a good talking point, not really great. And then the next one is no inflation. This one is the one that really cracked me up, probably got me to do this whole segment. The Republicans are for no inflation. Well, isn't that a bold statement? Isn't that courageous? It's just that many of the things that the Republicans do are all based on money printing. The Republicans passed Medicare Part D, the greatest entitlement, the largest entitlement since Lyndon Baines Johnson. The greatest. So we've had to print money to give seniors essentially free medicines from the pharma giants, and the U.S. government picks up the tab. You know what that is? It's inflationary. The Republicans, I'm looking at the list. It only goes to a few, and then it kind of tails off, you know, to make it look like it's really longer, but you can't see the details on that. I don't know if they've got in the Fed on here anywhere. I doubt very much I would see that, because if you don't want inflation, then you would say in the Fed. But the Republicans just want you to believe if you vote hard enough in 2022 and 2024, then inflation will go away, because Republicans are just for no inflation. Why weren't they for no inflation when the Federal Reserve has been telling us to our face for the past 50 years that they're targeting 2% inflation every year? Republicans didn't speak up against that. Republicans never speak up against the Federal Reserve, because they need the Federal Reserve to print up money for all of their harebrained ideas. The next one on this list is strong military. It is the Republican Party that has largely ushered in the $1 trillion a year military budget for us. It is largely the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, but a lot of the Republicans have been very excited about the empire that we've built all around the world that costs us money that we do not have and is bankrupting the United States and anyone causing inflation by printing up all this money. And then the last one on here that you can read, again, this is supposedly a long list, you can't see all of them, stand up to China and Putin. The Republican Party wants to stand up to China and Vladimir Putin. I tell you what, I've never been so proud to not be on either one of these teams in my life. I'll be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I got an email. I was looking through my emails. You can email me, MikeMadison@WYAB.com. I was looking through my emails and got one from a, I guess I won't name them. I don't really know why I'm not, but it's a local concert promoter, one of the more prominent ones in the area. And the title of the email I got is Live Music Misses You. And my heart just bleeds for anybody who's had entertainment venues over the last 2 years. Seriously, I really am sorry for you. But the problem is, this particular promoter in this venue at one point told me that I, as a heroic member of the control group, was not welcome in their establishment. And I've seen nothing to the contrary since then. So there was a vaccine requirement. I miss live music, too. But I'll be damned if I'm going to go somewhere where I am discriminated against because of a medical choice I've made. And I've got that smoke smell sometimes, so I think I'm carrying natural antibodies. But bottom line is, yeah, I miss live music too. As soon as you want to announce that you are sorry and apologize for following the hysterical Thomas Dobbs and with some level of a vaccine mandate, there's a lot of us that will continue to miss live music until you change that policy. I wanted to play this Sunday morning. I woke up and I hadn't paid much attention to the news during the weekend. I watched a little football, just did some stuff with friends and didn't really pay much attention to it. So Sunday morning, I know I have a problem with this. I say I'm never going to do this, but I keep doing it. You know, we all have our weaknesses. So I decided to hate listen a little bit to the Today Show just to see what was going on, if there's anything interesting. I got to start getting ready for a show. And by Sunday morning, I need to start figuring out exactly what's going on. And I ran across this piece. You know, they are just trying so hard to get us in a dust-up with Russia right now. And I think this is the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. It's the Biden administration, and it was the Trump administration and the Obama administration. Ever since the war on terror got a little long in the tooth and Americans got bored with it, they had to find another boogeyman. As I've told you before, it's no coincidence that it was only about 9 months between the fall of the Soviet Union and the invasion of Iraq the first time. Our peace dividend lasted for about 9 months, and of course we never saved any money during that time. We were right back off to the races in the Middle East after having faced off with the Soviet Union. The military-industrial complex always gets their way. So now they're trying to get us into this dust-up with Russia, and this is part of my drinking game here. I'm sorry I've got a show so early, but listen to the podcast later and make sure you take a drink every time you hear somebody in our foreign policy establishment, or in this case the media, accuse another country of something that we do, and this one was a biggie. Hold on a second. Poor Willie Geist, I had him muted here. Oh, they've got the worst, absolutely the worst web video player on NBC.
Russia standing on the brink of an invasion of neighboring Ukraine in a week when American diplomats met with Russian leaders in an attempt to stave off a war that could rope in the United States and its allies. NBC's Raf Sanchez is following the overnight developments for us from London. Raf, good morning.
Willie, good morning. The UK saying the Kremlin is preparing to mount a coup against the president of Ukraine and replace him with a pro-Russian leader. Now, the goal here from Russia's perspective may be to try to avoid a long, bloody war in Ukraine and instead just force a change of government from one that opposes the Kremlin to one that supports it. The White House National Security Council saying in a statement overnight, this kind of plotting is deeply concerning. The Ukrainian people have the sovereign right to determine their own future, and we stand with our democratically elected partners in Ukraine.
Okay. How about that? They're accusing Russia of plotting a coup of the Ukrainian government to put in somebody friendly to Russia in charge of Ukraine instead of the anti-Russian guy that's there now. This, again, is... I guess from the White House, it's next to the seal of the President of the United States. It says, this kind of plotting is deeply concerning. The Ukrainian people have the sovereign right to determine their own future, and we stand with our democratically elected partners in Ukraine. Now, I don't know. There's maybe people listening to me that don't understand why I think that's so funny. There may be some of you out there that haven't taken a drink yet. Well, it's because in 2014... we did that kind of deeply concerning plotting when we subverted the Ukrainian people who have the sovereign right to determine their own future, and we installed, through a coup, a bloody coup in the country of Ukraine, we overthrew their democratically elected government in Ukraine and put in a puppet for Western powers, the United States, Great Britain, all of the usual cast of criminals was involved in this overthrow of the Ukrainian government back in 2014. And this is always kind of left out of these news stories. It's so odd, but maybe not. There's a little bit of this clip left. Maybe we'll play it. Maybe they'll get around to go. Well, you know, I mean, this is the same thing. What we're accusing Russia of right now is exactly what we did in 2014. Maybe he's going to say that further in this clip. Let's see.
Now, Russia, of course, is denying these allegations, calling them disinformation. And Pope Francis today calling for an international day of prayer for peace in Ukraine. President Biden, meanwhile, has been huddling at Camp David with his national security officials.
There is a picture of this old man sitting in a chair on a Zoom national security Zoom call. There are two other people in the room. Properly spaced out, and they're all, of course, wearing their masks. I'm sure Russia is quaking in their boots, worried about seeing Joe Biden and his National Security Council all cowering in their masks over a Zoom call. Holy cow.
Remember, the president has said he will not deploy U.S. troops to Ukraine to fight there, but he is sending missiles and other equipment to the Ukrainians to help them defend themselves in the...
Thank you, U.S. taxpayers. Everybody pull out your latest pay stub and take a look at your federal withholding and know that you donated just a little bit of your hard-earned income to lethal weapons for the Ukrainian people. Now, you've been doing this for about three or four years now. Trump took the moratorium on lethal weapons off and started shipping lethal weapons to Ukraine at U.S. taxpayer expense. So you've been paying for these things for a while.
The event of an invasion. But of course, there is always the danger that if America's NATO allies get roped into the fighting, then the U.S. would be obligated under treaty to come to their defense. Willie?
Yeah, another fine treaty. NATO is such a great organization for us to be involved with. But anyway, I mean, that is the hypocrisy above all hypocrisy. It is in recent memory, within, 8 years ago, we actually participated in, and it was became public knowledge, particularly from Victoria Nuland's call, where we were picking and telling the EU has no say, we will pick the leader of Ukraine, that we actually went in and overthrew this government covertly and it became the worst held secret in the world. Russia knows what we did there. The rest of the world knows. Probably the only people who really don't know that the U.S. overthrew the Ukrainian government covertly back in 2014 are the American people. Because we have what it goes by the name of the media here that actually tells you nothing. I'll be right back. All right, final segment for the day. You know, this whole show is based on a lot of nuance. You know, I mean, I'll nuance law and order. I'll nuance everything. And this is just not a great world right now for nuance. So I'm probably shooting myself in the foot. When it comes to things, everybody wants to join a cult, it seems like. It's COVID, whether it's vaccines, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, whether it's Trump. Nobody's on the cult of Biden. They're just on the Trump cult or the anti-Trump cult. And the same is cryptocurrencies. I'm kind of agnostic. I love the idea. I just am not convinced it's going to survive. And I don't believe for a second that one single Bitcoin has any real rational reason for being worth $60,000, $64,000, excuse me, $33,000. Bitcoin is taking it on the chin. So I can probably be viewed as listening to me talk. It's like I'm anti-Bitcoin. I'm not. I just think the speculation in it is Fed-driven like anything else. There's so much money sloshing around in the system, it bid up the price of a Bitcoin. It wasn't any intrinsic value. But boy, try having that conversation with somebody who loves cryptocurrencies. They will just tell you, you have to get in on it. It's going to be worth $100,000, $200,000, $1 million, and they may be right. But they are not at all willing to accept any of the weaknesses or talk to somebody who just hates Bitcoin. And they will not be convinced that there is any value of it whatsoever. I love the idea. I tell the people who hate Bitcoin, I say, yeah, I love the idea, though. Like, yeah, but it's stupid. I mean, you know, there's nuance in the middle. But Bitcoin is just getting prison pounded right now, as are all the cryptocurrencies, as the stock market gets pounded. I thought the cryptocurrencies were supposed to be a store of value. Something that was a diversification from the stock market. But as the stock market goes down, cryptocurrencies are going down too. What it really is people ran out of the stimmies, all the Wall Street bets, all those meme stocks that were, you know, the GameStop stock craze that was going on 6 months ago. All those things have been beaten down to a pulp. A lot of people have lost a lot of money over the last 6 months. So we'll see where this all shakes out. Again, I love the idea of Bitcoin. I just don't have any idea how they are setting the value of this except for a supply and demand, which is fine, but it appears that the demand is waning. As this story says, it's wiped $130 billion off of its value over the last 24 hours. And not exactly great for a store of value. And to put it in a real-world context, check this story out. Now, I'm just going to have to assume this was sent out on a tweet. I'm just going to read it because it's interesting. On November 12th, Odell Beckham Jr. signed a deal with the Rams worth $750,000. He announced he would take that in Bitcoin. At the time, Bitcoin was worth $64,293. Today, it's worth $35,400. And as of right now, it's even lower than that. It's around $33,000. So today, that deal is worth $412,953. Odell will be taxed on $750,000. Federal and California state tax will be 50.3%. That means Odell Beckham, as of now, has netted, get this number, has netted $35,703 from the Rams contract this year. Now, I don't know if, you know, Odell Beckham might have taken his pay in Bitcoin. And look, the guy's super wealthy. So this is just a small part of, I'm sure, his entire portfolio. I don't know if he manages his money well and he's got a lot sloshing around or if he spends every cent he's got. But if he spends every cent he's got, I hope he spent it fast when he got it in Bitcoin 6 months ago. Because his $750,000 payday for the Rams for the end of the season quickly became, after depreciation of Bitcoin and taxes, $35,703.
I got to tell you, that sounds like something that within the locker room, they might have a little bit of fun with him. There's probably a lot of players that have played for the last 4 or 5 months that made more than $35,000, and he's one of the superstars. This is the danger of Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies. We'll probably talk a little bit about it. I don't have my notes in front of me for what I've got for Tech Tuesday tomorrow. I know I've got some interesting stories, but cryptocurrencies may be one of those things. I know there are people who will email me that I just don't understand. Cryptos are going to be great, and they're going to go to $1 million a piece. And there are other people who say that cryptocurrencies are worth nothing and they will end up being zero. I think it's somewhere not quite at either one of those, my personal opinion. You know, also the Federal Reserve put out its white paper last week. I didn't even talk about it. I ran out of time one day. Federal Reserve has put out their white paper wondering if they should issue a cryptocurrency. As a matter of fact, I think that is in Tech Tuesday tomorrow because there are some qualifiers on this digital coin that the Federal Reserve is planning on putting out. This is a horrific idea to entrench the Federal Reserve more in people's lives. But maybe if the Federal Reserve actually enters your life and your financial futures are tied to the Fed, maybe you'll finally start paying attention. Maybe people will finally understand what the Federal Reserve is when they send you a stimmy, and then they put conditions on how you can spend your money, and then occasionally they go into that account and they take it all back. Maybe people will start to wonder, what is this Federal Reserve thing? And what they say about the Federal Reserve is there's two things about the Federal Reserve. Number one, it's not federal. And number two, it has no reserves. We'll talk about it all tomorrow. Have a great day.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.